Hey, hey, hey! Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever in the world you are. I welcome you to Step Into Your Sunshine. This is your host, Rachel Coudron. I am the owner of Etsy Boutique, Coudron's Curiosities, and the copywriter of RC Copywriting. I have a fabulous guest with me this evening, and I would love for her to introduce herself.
Hi everyone, I'm Amy Sell, CEO of Rainbow Poochie. I'm a children's author and dream catcher artist.
Wow, lots of parts to you, Amy. So let's start off today with asking you, what were some of the defining moments in your life that shaped who you are?
Well, some of the biggest defining moments, the biggest one was my motorcycle accident. Coming up 6 years ago, that a lot of people would think would change my life for the worst, but looking back now, it was the best thing that ever happened to me. I had a business that wasn't really working and I was holding on to it for dear life. I had the accident, had to close that, and I started finding who I was. That's one of the biggest definers of who I am and why I do what I do, and how I keep my mindset going, because it's all to do with looking back at how I got through that major 8 months of being bedbound and 7 hour surgeries just to walk, and being told that I might never walk again. So I just always look back to that moment and go, well, if I can get through that, then, you know, I can grab that and do that. So that was my biggest defining moment in my life. And it's the reason why I just grab every opportunity I can now.
Wow. Oh, my goodness. That must have been such a heart-wrenching experience to go through that. And for me, I haven't personally experienced it, but my mom has just gotten off a six-month time span of being bedbound in the ICU, and she is also learning how to walk again and all of those things.
It's so intense that I look back now, and I don't have, because of all the morphine and the tablets, I don't have many memories from that period of time. But the one thing that sticks out was the intensive physio regime, coming over and doing the walking bars, and just something that people do every day, having to learn to do it again. It's such a hard thing to process in your mind, because everyone's walking all around you, and then you're like, well, I can't do that, and I need to learn how to put one foot in front of the other. It's such a weird process.
My mom describes it the same way, and she also describes it as being very frustrated, and because it's not linear, or at least her experience hasn't been linear, where maybe one day she can take multiple steps and then the next day she's really tired and she can't take any.
So 6 years on, I'm on sticks now, and 6 years on, I'll be on my sticks and sometimes I'll have to stop. My daughter will look at me and she'll go, what are you doing? I'm like, I've got to think, I need to remember how to do this. And she's like, yeah, trying to think which foot goes first, aren't you? And I'm like, yeah, because for everyone else it's muscle memory. For me now, it's not muscle memory anymore. So sometimes if I'm walking around the house, I have to stop and remind myself to put one foot in front of the other. And that's sort of 6 years on now.
Oh, that's incredible insight, because I wonder if my mom will be the same. And also, it's helping educate the world that's tuning in today, is when we take for granted a lot of the things that we can just do naturally, like moving our hands, sitting up, walking, running, bending over, all of those types of things. And I think your story is very inspirational for people, that they know what you've been through and how hard you've had to fight back to get where you are today.
I still have carers come in to bath me overnight. I mean, I'm 36. No, I'm not. I'm 37. Just had a birthday. I still have carers come in to dress me, because I still can't dress my bottom half. I still can't get my bad leg in a bath. So I have carers twice a day. So I'm running my business, doing all the things, being a single mum, And then there's twice a day where I actually can't get myself ready for bed or dressed. And it's like, but I can do all the things, and it's so frustrating because I can do all the things in between, but I can't dress myself. It's just, but it's taken a while and I've dealt with it. And it's like, okay, I can't do that. But hey, I've got a business, I've got a good daughter, everything else in the world's flourishing. So if I can't put a pair of trousers on, you know, let it be.
Wow. I find that so inspirational, the mindset. You're accepting yourself as you are, and what can I do? And then making the most of that is such an inspirational story to me and to all of our listeners. It's because many times we're going through day-to-day life, taking for granted the things that we have or our capabilities that we can do. And we don't, unless something is taken from you, then you don't really begin to appreciate it. And for me, something, we won't say taken because I was born with it, but I was born over half deaf. And people always ask me, oh my goodness, that must be so hard. And it must be so hard to adapt and all of those things. But the truth is that's not really the case for me because it's always been this way. I never knew anything different. But again, referring back to my mom, is that she lost her hearing, and not all of it, but most of it. And she's had to completely adapt and rewire how she communicates with people and where she needs to be in rooms, where she needs to be seated at the dinner table or out going out to eat or in a conference or things like that. And she never really knew what it was like before then. And people often tell me, oh, yeah, you know, oh, I've lost some hearing as I've gotten older, or I have a daughter who is hard of hearing or deaf or those types of things. And what people forget is that why they may have experiences with it, or they may have experiences as they've gotten older, they don't actually personally know what it's like to live with it every single day. And for hearing, it's more accepted if you're older and you have hearing loss. It's not really accepted when you're 10 and you can't hear.
Yeah, I have the same problem with being a young person on a mobility scooter. So the amount of looks I get in town because people associate mobility scooters and wheelchairs with older people. So I'm normally out. If I go out with my daughter, I take my mobility scooter. She gets out of the shed. She's like, come on then, let's go, mum. And you know, people are looking at me and I'm like, you're looking at me because I'm young. It's okay. I can't get up. You can see my sticks in front of me. You can see that I physically can't walk. But you're still giving me the looks because I'm in a mobility scooter and I'm young. And it's something that people associate with older people. And something I've found over the years is I never knew how much space you needed in a wheelchair or in a mobility scooter going around the shops. I live in quite a rural area, so a lot of independent stores and tiny little independent shops can't always get in the door. Sometimes they've got a step to get in, so I can't get in with my scooter, or I can't get down the aisles, or people just jump out in front of me when I'm going down the road, and I'm like, I'm on the scooter, can I run you over? You know, and it's trying to get everyone to accept that it's okay for people that are younger to be in a mobility scooter and make shops realise that we need that tad bit more space so we can do our shopping and be independent as much as I physically can.
I think this is a great, great point. And I recently spoke to Lou about this, Lou Pluckett. And yeah. She, for her, it's about her vision. But the accessibility of the world for people that are disabled, whether that be a physical disable, a disability or mental disability or things like that, are really lacking. And the general society don't really understand that because they don't have to deal with it every day. Like we talked about retreats or networking events, the place that is chosen is really important. And it's much more important than people realize. For me, it was about If something is, it has a vaulted ceiling or high ceilings, things either, if it's high, the voices just dissipate. And if it's vaulted, that it's echoey. And so I can't hear in those situations. And then Lou talked about just the accessibility of getting to the place is difficult. And so I'd love for you to tell me about you, what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah, getting in and out of places. I'm very lucky around here with my networking. I do a lot of online networking. But my networking leaders locally have always been really good and made sure that it's kind of flat for me to get in, or there's space for me with my sticks and stuff. So I am really lucky that local networking leaders know that I like to attend and they're thinking about these things. But I think the world is changing compared to when I was younger. When I worked in care as a carer, because that's what I did for a living, it was a lot worse when I was taking clients out. But the world is changing. It's just not changing quick enough. You know, silly things like dropped curbs drive me mad, because on the mobility scooter, I have to have a drop curb because I've got a broken pelvis, so I can't bump. And we have a drop curbs, but they're all broken up because council don't do anything with them. So I'm rattling and rolling, or my scooter gets stuck in the cracks and then I can't move and have to get off my scooter, and my daughter, who's 11, has to lift my scooter up, put it on the pavement for me to get back in. And it's like, it's a drop curb, I should be able to go down and up again. You know, silly things like the council's not looking after the roads, or I can't get in the shops, and it's really frustrating. Or the worst one is when I'm out with my daughter, and the one that drives me completely mad is people will talk to her about me over me because I'm in the scooter. And I just like, my legs don't work, but my brain and my mouth and my ears and my eyes work, you know, and people, and it, you know, I used to get it when I used to take clients out when I worked in care. People see a wheelchair and automatically talk to the person over the wheelchair and not the person in the wheelchair, and I get really frustrated and I do speak up, and my daughter always goes, she can hear you, she, you know, you can talk to her, she's fine. I'm like, hello, I'm down here, you know, she's 11, she's not going to know what's going on with me.
Oh my goodness, you have just bullseyed something that I am very passionate about, is when not just everyday people, but also doctors ignore you and speak to the more capable person. And what I mean by that is, going back to my mom and this experience with her in the hospital, is my mom is hard of hearing, right? She wears hearing aids. I wear hearing aids. I have a hearing aid. And during the process, the doctors would come in, or the nurses, and then they would talk to the family members. Me, my siblings, my dad, other people, but they wouldn't talk to my mom when she was lucid. And that would drive me crazy. My mom has multiple degrees in medicine. She's extremely intelligent. She knows exactly what's occurring and she knows what she wants. And I'm like, wait, okay, like the more educated person in this room is her, not me. And you're just gonna have to make an effort to speak to her, because she has some hearing loss. And I, sometimes people do the same with me now when I'm in France, where I'm still developing the French language. And my husband is, he's French, so he's very much capable of speaking French and English. And so they'll just overlook me. Or sometimes when I'm like, huh, what'd you say? Sometimes it's not about that I didn't hear what you said, it's confirming that I heard you correctly. And so they'll just like, ah, and they'll go and talk to my husband. I'm like, ah, it's so frustrating, because I'm like, oh, I'm perfectly capable. Just because you may have to repeat something again or speak at a higher octave doesn't mean that I'm less capable cognitively. It's just so irritating. And that would irritate me endlessly.
Yeah, doctor's appointments. I always have like my best friend or my mum with me, because I have fibro as well. So I sometimes get this brain fog. So I always take someone with me just to confirm what the doctors have said, just in case I'm having a bad day and it doesn't quite sink in. And they'll talk to them and I'm like, no, hello, it's me that's having the operation. It's me that's going through all of this. And they'll look at me and then they'll turn to my best mate, and my mate will go, and she can hear you and she can answer you. And I'm like, I'm over here.
Yes, so much so. Is that happens to me all the time in French. Some of it does have to do with comprehension on my side, but also the hearing part. They just turn to my husband and I'm like, okay, yahoo, do I need to like put an alarm on my chest to make sure that you look at me when you're speaking to me? And this happened predominantly when we first moved and I was pregnant with my one and only child. Then when we would go in, and because I wasn't completely fluent in the language or hearing them, then it was as if I played like third fiddle to my own pregnancy, because they never addressed me directly. And it was so entirely frustrating for me. And I think it's really important, actually, that we share these experiences with the world and on a platform, because even my husband, he's like, well, I mean, they were just talking to me because it was easier for them to communicate. I'm like, yeah, but that's the point. The point is that they're not wanting to make any efforts to communicate with me because it takes more effort, or they don't want to have to communicate with my mom because they may have to repeat something, or they may have to talk louder than they feel comfortable doing. Or, what would your opinions be on this?
See, I'm quite a vocal person. I own my stuff. I own my disability. I'm quite forward. And I always think, if I wasn't so forward, my mum always says I'm not forwards and going backwards, you know. I'm always two steps in front of everyone else, and I'm one of these, I speak my mind. I'm a little bit of a boss, and you know, I'm my own person and I own it. But there's other people out there who are vulnerable, who are just getting to grips with their disability, that won't speak out and correct people when they talk over them. And I would say I'm quite lucky that I'm confident enough to go, oi, talk to me, because it's about me. But then I, on the way home, I think, if I was shy or I couldn't do it or I was embarrassed, I wouldn't own that. And I always feel for those people that can't or won't say, you need to talk to me, not this person, or you need to make this accessible for me.
Yes. So much of that is, I am also a very forward, direct communicator with people. And if I don't like how they're communicating with me, then generally speaking, I confront them about it. In France, it's a little bit more difficult because I don't have all the language to confront them with. So that makes things a little bit difficult. But I also worry, and I think to those that are more soft-hearted or more soft-spoken people, and it's really hard for them to confront people or to put their disability on display. And I think I wonder if they're having the same feelings, like they get sick and tired of being ignored, or they get sick and tired of being put second, or they get sick and tired of not being able to go into stores or not communicate with people effectively because they're not accessible, or the schools or stores are not inclusive.
Yeah, and what makes it worse is that can cause a dark hole and a black hole for people. And I've been through depression, and when I had my bike accident when I was in the bed, I started hitting the dark hole. If it's not accessible or people ignore them and they can't speak up, it just starts to open that big dark hole. And not everyone knows how to get out of it, or doesn't know how to reach out for the help, or doesn't know where to get the help. So all this people talking over us or to our friends, they don't realise that they're creating this depression type situation for the person in the chair or the person with the disability, because they're not included, and being left out and not included can really hurt and damage somebody.
Absolutely. So much. I agree 100% with what you're saying. And I've seen that in my own life, and also in a book I've read recently, is it was saying, it's called Your Body Keeps the Score, The Body Keeps the Score, that kind of title. And it talks about being like a victim to your own situation. And so what I mean by that is when doctors say, like, there's nothing that you can do, you can only take this medication, you can only have this operation, or people are like, oh, no, you're not capable of performing this job because you need this, this, and that. Like, you're no longer in charge of your own life, and your life is just happening to you. And that very much so sparks and ignites that black hole of like, well, if I can't do anything for me, why am I here? If I can't lead my own life, what's the point of living? And that is very, very dangerous place to be. And it happens when people take away people's power.
Yeah, I felt the same in the hospital bed. I mean, I spent 2 months in a hospital bed in hospital, and then 8 months in my living room in a hospital bed. You know, it was a struggle for my marriage. My daughter was only 6. She was coming up for 7, so she was still very little. Didn't really understand what was going on. I had district nurses come out every day. I had doctors in and out. I had more meds than I know what to do with, and I was just literally watching telly, doing my cross stitch, just literally watching everyone have a life around me. And this dark hole started, which is when I got back into my dream catch making to try and find something different to occupy my mind. But everyone was doing everything around me, and I was being told constantly, you know, the physio is going to be a struggle, you're not going to be able to walk. And I'm like, okay, we'll find a way around this. You know, and my daughter was the triggering point for me. Is I was having a really, really bad day. And put in perspective, I broke my pelvis in 5 places. And, you know, if it was a broken leg, I could rest it. But you can't rest the pelvis because it's holding both ends of your body together. So, and it's constantly in use. There's no way of taking pressure off it at all. So I couldn't lay down without being in pain, sit up or stand without being in pain. I was having a really, really bad day. I'd hit my limit for morphine for the day, and we were only at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And my ex-husband said to me, come on, babe's going to be home soon. And the last thing we wanted for her to see like this. I was crying for my mum. I couldn't cope. My mum was away on holiday. I was like, all right, I'll try and sort of just be brave. And then if you could take her out so I could have a really good cry, that'd be great. And she sat there, and she come in, and she just sat next to me, and she went, I'm going to grow my legs tonight. And I went, but you grow every night. That's what children do. Children grow, darling. And she went, if I grow my legs, you can have them and you won't be in pain. And then this sort of light bulb come on in my head, and it was like, you've got to get out of this bed. You can't let your daughter see you like this. You know, you've got so much in you, and your daughter's offering you her body parts because she can't cope seeing you like this. And that's when I took up my dream catch making again. I was really pushing that. My friend was offering to sell them. Things were going well. So I was like, oh, I'll start the business. I started the business from a hospital bed. My first craft event was actually a month after I started walking. I literally went in my wheelchair with my zipper frame, and I'd probably taken about 20 steps up until that point. So it was like a month after being out of my bed, and I just started sending them, and it kind of gave me a purpose. And I was like, right, I can do this. I need to walk. I don't care what the doctors say anymore. I'm not going to let my daughter watch me rot away in this bed. I saw the damage it did to my mum when her dad died. And I was living in the same house my mum lived in, and my mum couldn't really visit me while I was going through my stuff, bless her heart, because where they'd put my hospital bed was exactly where they put her dad's hospital bed when he died. And I then met my granddad, and it was before the days of chemo, and he laid there for like 2 years just rotting away. And I was like, I can't let my daughter go through what my mum went through, just watching a parent waste away and waste away. And my mum put her life on hold, waiting for her dad to get better. When I got poorly and my bed was in the same place, my mum come in once and she's like, I'm on the other end of the phone. I'll visit when I can. I'm like, she went, you where dad was? And I was like, okay, I get that. You know, my support system's there. You're on the phone. You're doing the school runs. And I totally understand you don't want to be in the same room in exactly the same place as where your dad died. And I just didn't want my daughter to go through the same thing.
Oh my goodness. I'd say I teared up and the tears ran down my face, like listening to your story about your daughter and the empathy that she was showing you in that moment, because children are so inspirational to us as parents. It's like we gather the strength that we need because we need it for our kids. And that just really like touches my heart, because my daughter has done the same thing for me. If I'm feeling, if I'm having a really bad day, and she comes and talks to me, and we're very intertwined energetically. And so if something is wrong, she just knows. And I'm like, okay, I have to be strong for her. Even if I can't be strong for me today, I have to be strong for her. And I think that just is really inspirational and really
created like this teamwork thing, because obviously I still have bad days where I can't, because one of my breaks has reopened at the moment, so I've lived 3 years still with one break open. We've created this teamwork. It's like she'll come home from school, she's like, right, obviously that needs doing, mum couldn't do that because it's been left, so I'll do that, but tomorrow she'll probably have a good day and she can do something for me. And we kind of have this teamwork thing going, and she'll write little messages on my board in my workshop, and it'll be like, mum, I'm so proud of you, keep going, you know, we're doing well. And we've got this, like, we're more like, everyone says we're more like friends, because we've just got this teamwork going that, you know, if mum can't do something today, you jump in. But that's okay, because you're 11 and you've got your hopes and dreams, and mummy's there and I'm supporting you that side. And we just sort of gelled into this team.
Oh, that's so beautiful to hear, and absolutely inspirational and empowering. That, I mean, because you mentioned that you were a single mom, and so, you know, your daughter, you stepping up to the plate first, and your daughter meeting you there and saying, okay, mom, I'm ready and I'm here to support you in whatever way is necessary. I just think that is incredible, and you guys must have such a incredible bond.
Yeah, we kind of have a house mantra. So if she's struggling at school, or because she does competition judo for the county and her club, so we're always heading off for judo competitions. And we have a mantra on the fridge, and it says, if mum can walk, we can do it. And we always say, if mum can walk again, we can do this. So if there's this, like, if a massive barrier comes up or a struggle is struggling, and I'm like, go look at the fridge, and she's like, if mum can walk, we can do anything. And I'm like, yes, let's do this. We'll find a way. We may have to go the long way round. So I was saying to, again, Louise, we've always said that chronic illness sufferers, we tend to go the long way round to get to the goals. You know, in business, you've got all these goals, and some people head straight there. But when you've got a chronic illness, you kind of have to take the long way round. You can't always get out of bed in the morning, or you don't have the spoons or the energy. And it's like, oh, so you go the long way around, you achieve it. It just takes you like a month longer than everyone else to get to that same goal.
Yeah, and that's true. But it also shows the resilience and the tenacity that you and others have. Is that, I love the mantra, if mom can walk, then we can do anything. It's just that you started that when we started the podcast with that. So like you referred back of all the experiences and all the difficulties that you faced, and then looking back to where I was to where I am now is so inspirational to you and to others. And I think including that mantra on your fridge with your daughter is so powerful, because she knows from personal experience what you've gone through. She knows that so many years ago you were laying down in bed and incapable of walking and moving and in constant pain. I mean, and look at where you are now. That's just incredible.
Yeah, it's just one step after another. We've gone the long way around, but we've got there. And I'm facing hospital again, and I'm facing another 9-hour surgery to reclose the break that's opened with the metal plating that's all broken. And we're facing 9-hour surgery. And I said to her, look, mummy's got to go in. I've got to have 9-hour surgery. And she's like, right, I'll go stay at my auntie's, or dad will have me, that'd be fine. I'm like, it might be when you're starting secondary school. And she went, it's only starting school, mum. Nan and grandad be there, my auntie will be there. We've got the support system, you know, from my best mate and all my mates around me and family. She'll find a way, you go heal, and then we can actually go do the things we want to do, like travel and go to London, because we just can't do that at the moment. So if they get that break right, we'll be able to go a bit further and do a little bit more. So we've done it once, we'll do it again. And I'm like, okay.
Wow, oh my goodness. Oh gosh. I think as a mother, it just hits me in a different kind of way listening to you. And my daughter having a similar kind of very empathetic, caring personality, I could see her being the same. And I just it makes me real emotional to hear your story, because it's like she's being that support for you. Like this is gonna, it's an everyday thing, mom. You know, I mean, it's not, but in that kind of mentality, we've done this before, we can do it again.
I mean, I said to her the other day, I put a big post on Facebook a few days ago, because I was sat listening to Sarah Davis's book, because I'm dyslexic, so I have Audible on a lot. And she was reflecting on her time with the kids and how she built a business and what the kids had to put up with. And I was thinking, well, hang on, a lot of people see my daughter and they always tell me how well behaved and polite she is. And you know, Leona from MIB adores her, because she comes to as many MIB meetings as she can and she loves it, and she's got her own little business now. And I'm like, well, she's got all this going on. But people don't realize, before I had carers coming in, my daughter was 9 and she was dressing me, she was washing me, she was putting me in the bath. And they don't see the stuff that they see her outside the house, but they don't see the fact that she has to pick stuff up off the floor for me, or lift my leg, or put my socks on, put my shoes on if we go out, and all these little things that other children don't have to do and don't need to do. And they have a great childhood, but it's constantly this mum thing in my head to make sure, balance of we work as a team, but you get a childhood too. And sometimes that's a bit hard when I'm having a bad day. It's like, she's got to be in, she can't leave me, I'm having a wobble, I've had a fall. And she's like, right, I'll stay in. And it's like, well, then you're missing out. And you know, the mum guilt then starts. So I put this massive post up on Facebook, because I don't think people realize that children that are young carers or care for a family member, exactly what they have to do to go through day-to-day life and what's put on their shoulders.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, I mean you're right. They're, I mean, really, they're like young superstars. They know what's going on. It's not like they don't know what's going on. They're very lucid, they're very aware, and they know that, okay, mom needs this, dad needs this, sister needs that, a brother needs that. And okay, we have to take care of those things first before we can go to something different. And I think, though, with that knowledge, they understand also that they've learned right now it has to be about mom, but later it can be about me. And she knows that your intention is on her, and that no matter what needs to happen, you will give her that time when it's the right time for you. I think that's beautiful, and it also talks to her maturity levels. Like, I've never met her, but I can just imagine she's incredibly mature for her age.
Very, and I find a lot of children that do have to care for somebody at home, they grow up a lot quicker than most children, because they have to deal with medication and things, so they have to be a young adult really early. I mean, she was really mature by the time she was 7, because she'd been through all this stuff with the accident. So she'd kind of grown up and outgrown the stuff that she should have been playing with at that time, because she was just like, I haven't got time for that, and I need to be mature and grown up.
I think it's a good topic to bring into the podcast is also, how are the children feeling? What are they going through? You know, how does it affect them? And how you guys are also working as a team to move forward. Now, I want to go back and talk to one of the topics that you talked about just previously, and that you said that you started your business in the hospital bed, and then you said you did your first craft show a month after you took 20 steps, which is absolutely mind-blowing to me. And I'm like, wow, if she couldn't be any more inspirational, here is the hammer. She does it again, breaks all the glass, and coming through, shining star. And I just want to know, what was that like? Like, what were those moments like? And what was that like for your daughter?
It was really weird. I mean, I'd booked the show and everyone told me not to. And I'd phoned my mum and I went, right, all this stuff at mine, all the stuff I made, you need to collect. I'm going to do some printing. And she's like, I said, I'll get in your car, have to put me in the wheelchair. You and Dad are going to have to set up. And my mum was like, my dad was early 80s at the time, and he's like, you're having a laugh, right? So I'd ordered all this shelving, and they're like, right, okay, we'll set up. And I'm like, right, I phoned the organiser. There's enough room for my wheelchair behind the table. She's pretty good. We've known her a while. So I used to do her events for my old business. So I was like, right, she knows me. She knows I need the access behind the table. And it was really weird because, like, I had customers again talking to my mum, and she's like, oh, my daughter made it. And then they'd go back to my mum, and I'm like, mum's just set up and she's here to do cups of tea run and loo runs. I know what's on the table. I know what I've made. I can tell you about it. And they're talking to my mum, and my mum's like, and my daughter made it. And my daughter made it. And my daughter made it. And I'll be like, trying to talk. And they'd be trying to talk to my mum. So first craft fair was a bit frustrating. I mean, now 5 years on, I'm 5 years into Rainbow Pooch. You know, I had the accident 6 years ago. You know, people talk to me now because I pushed my mum to the side with her little business. I'm like, you go do your table, leave me to mine, just watch mine when I need a win. She's like, you're doing too much standing. I'm like, as long as you set up the table, help me put the stock out, I'm good to go. So, I mean, my mum and dad still set up for me and still help me set up. But it is frustrating when customers, again, talk to someone else when I'm sat there and it's like, I did that. But most customers around here that are regulars tend to know now that, you know, we talk to Amy, we don't talk to her mum about it, because Amy's just going to get frustrated, and you're behind the stall and you're trying to be polite and you're trying to be professional, and in your head you're going, I really want to shout at you right now and just tell you that I can do this and that I am capable of talking to you. But you're trying to be professional at the same time, so you kind of have to be nice. But yeah, it was really weird, and I still try and break as many barriers as I can, because, you know, I think the accident taught me that life is just too short, and if I want it and if it's my dream, then I need to go for it and just do it, because we're only here once.
Exactly. And you are such an inspiration for other people. And when people listen into this podcast, they're just going to be amazed. Their minds are going to be blown. And for me, I know I'm going to walk away from this podcast and you're going to leave an imprint on my heart. And because your story, there are so many similarities between you and my mom. And your daughter reminds me so much of mine, even though they haven't gone through the same things and they're not the same ages. It's just they have... My daughter has a very similar personality, and I just know if something like that happened, then she would be the same. And that just really affects me as a mother. And I think going back to your shows and you just going all the way in and saying, you know, this is what I want, so I'm going to go for it. I'm going to go all the way in. I'm just going to jump head first and see what happens. I think is incredible. And so many people, they restrict themselves because they feel that it's not the right time, or I'm not ready, or I don't have enough crafts for a craft fair, or I don't have any experience, or I don't know how to set up, or, you know, there's just limitless amounts of excuses of why people choose not to move forward. So I think it's very powerful that you had all of these legitimate reasons to not do craft fairs or to stop doing craft fairs. Yet, despite all of these, you are continuing to move forward.
Yeah, I think people are the worst, their own worst enemy when it comes to putting barriers up and doing stuff, because we all do it. Everyone, there's not one person on the planet that doesn't go, oh, I can't do that because of something really simple. Feel the fear and do it anyway. It's never a right time. If you're sat waiting for the right time to do something, you will always sit waiting, because it's never the right time. I mean, we're going through a global recession at the moment. The money situation is rubbish. Everyone's struggling. And I was saying to Leona from MIB the other day, you know, if small businesses can just see it to the end of this year, then the independent businesses, I think, will see the benefit of just sticking it out. You know, I've heard lots of people say, I've got loads of crafts, I really should sell them, but nobody's got any money. And it's like, yes, but if people want it, they'll buy it. You know, the right customer and the right time. You can do a craft show, you know, yourself with your earrings. You can do a craft show, sit there for 6 hours of the day, loads of people through the door, not sell anything, feel really deflated. And then you can go to a smaller one, a couple of people through the door, and sell out. You know, it's never the right time. It's never the right place. It all depends on who walks through the door. You just got to do it.
Yes. I love that mindset. I really, really do. So I want to ask you just a couple more things before we go. And one thing is for our listeners, you can't see, but I can see that she has this beautiful background behind her. And I believe it is a book that she wrote. So I would love to know about that.
Yeah, so in lockdown, I wrote a children's book. However, I was majorly bullied at school for being quite severely dyslexic, not just by children, but teachers made me feel stupid as well. You know, so I never thought I'd really do much. And when it come to reading to my daughter, I'd proofread a book, so I knew that I wouldn't stumble, try to pretend that I knew the story, made up stories. I was really good at, because I couldn't read very well, making stories up on the spot. And during lockdown, my daughter went, "Should really write some of these down, Mum?" And I went, "Actually, that's a really good idea." So I sat and I wrote Pip, and it took about 7 to 8 edits, if not more. I think it's been edited more times than I know what to do with. I learned punctuation, but through networking, I met the beautiful Nixie. We become good friends. And I sent her a copy of what I'd written down, because I was like, I've got this. It's been sat on my laptop for 2 years. And I said, Nixie, have a read, see what you think. Is it worth you illustrating it, or is it pants? Tell me if it's pants, because I know I'm dyslexic and I know I struggle. And I got back, oh my God, we need to make this into a book. This is an amazing story. And I'm like, do you know what? It would be really nice to show them bullies and show my teachers that didn't think I'd amount to anything that I've done it. And screw you, because I've got a book. And I may be dyslexic and I can't read and write properly, but hey, I'm an author and tough. And I was like, I didn't embrace my dyslexia until I was well into my 30s. I was always really ashamed of it. And I used to avoid business opportunities because of it. If it involved filling out forms or a lot of reading and writing, I'd be like, yeah, I can't do that. I've got something on that day. I can't do that. And then I sort of got involved in MIB and I met a few other people. Women in business who were also dyslexic. I'm like, hang on, they're owning this. So why am I being ashamed of it when everyone else is owning it? So I started to own it and realised that it is my superpower. It's the reason why I'm really creative. I can't read and write properly, so my brain does hands-on things that make me creative. So yeah, I've got a book, and I've been going around to schools reading the book to children and talking about dyslexia in primary schools to try and stop the bullying in secondary school, and so the kids understand, like, and the dyslexic children in the room can go, oh, so we can do that because she did that. And I went to my daughter's school Friday and then nearly cried, because it was this little, he must have been about 6, 7, he put his hand up during question time and he went, you read that so well you wouldn't have even known you were dyslexic. And I could have cried. It was like 6 or 7 and I was welling up, you know. And it was like, you read that so beautifully for someone who struggles to read and write. And he was like 6 or 7 and I was like, yes, this is it. You know, I've told the children that it's a superpower. So I've been going around telling the children that dyslexia is a superpower and not a barrier, and you know, I can write children's stories.
Wow, oh my goodness, another groundbreaking situation coming up from you. That is just amazing. When I think about what you're doing, you turned your setback into becoming an advocate, and that is just it's mind-blowing and an inspirational story is that you took something that you were ashamed of for many, many years and then flipped it on its head and said, you know, no more, no more. And not only just did you publish the story and advocate about it and share it with the masses, but then you took the additional step to go into schools and to, you know, put yourself on center stage and dyslexia on center stage and take on that probably at first uncomfortable feeling of reading in front of the children and the teachers.
Yeah. It's my biggest fear is reading in public any more than four people. And I'm like, well, and because it was my, the first school I went into was my daughter's school. And she was like, look at me, Mum. It's bedtime. Just look at me. And bless her, the teacher kind of made her go red. She's 11 now, so we're in that really steady preteen, everything's embarrassing stage. And assembly was led by the primary, the reception teacher, and she went, and Freya's mummy. And Freya's like, I haven't called her mummy since I was four. And I'm like, and she's like, would you like to introduce your mum? And my daughter stood up and she was like, this is my mum. She's dyslexic, and she read wrote a children's book to prove to people and to prove to her bullies. And I'm like, don't wind me up, I've got to read in a minute, child. And she's like, my mum's incredible, she might be sat down because her leg don't work, but listen to her story because she couldn't read and write and now she can. And I'm like, okay, you're like, get back in your chair and let mummy read now, because I'm starting to, you know, bless her. But yeah, we did it. Yeah. And we asked the children if they knew about dyslexia, and one said, it's a condition that makes you struggle to write. And I'm like, yeah, and it also makes me struggle to read, and I don't understand punctuation and words move. And the children were like, what do you mean words move? And I'm like, sometimes I can look at a book and the words start to move, and it's not my eyesight, it's my brain, because it confuses the written word.
Wow. I mean, I think that's so important that people hear your message. And the part about it that really spoke to me was that you chose to take something that you viewed as a negative and change it into a positive. And for me, I'm in the process of writing right now, is I'm writing a children's book, and the main character is modeled after me as a child, where she has a hearing loss. Because for me, growing up, I didn't have any dolls. I didn't have any books that showed people like me. Nobody had hearing loss, or it was always viewed as like some kind of problem. Like they couldn't alert people because they were deaf, or they missed up the pronunciation of a something because they couldn't hear correctly, or whatever the thing. It was never the hero of the story, or the protagonist was never the person that was deaf. And for me, in my book, she is. And she is the main character, and she's the protagonist, the hero. And so when I see that you have already written this book and put it out into the world and turned your negative into a positive, it's like, that is my dream for myself, is that I take what is viewed as a negative, hearing loss, even though that was never how I interpreted it for myself, and turn it into a positive for the rest of society and for all of those children now that have hearing loss or were born deaf. Is I want them to see themselves in my story.
Yeah, it's like when I wrote Pip, I wanted to convey, because it's all about Pip has nightmares, and I wanted to convey the importance of children talking about them. Children talking to friends when they have problems. So he goes on a journey and he makes friends, and he talks to his little flower friend Bloom, and he talks to the crow, rather than, you know, some children bottle things up and they don't talk, or they don't know how to. And I think as a society we need to encourage children to talk. So my kind of, there's this discreet message in the book that you can talk to your friends about anything, so please talk to somebody, you know, even if it is just a dodgy sleep. And I wanted to be inclusive, which is why my main character is a mushroom, because I didn't want to pick do a child and leave people out and make them not feel inclusive, because I think it's important in stories that everybody's inclusive, you know, from race to disability to anything, we should be more inclusive.
I think that's an incredible message, and I'm looking forward to buying a Pip Can't Sleep and sharing it with my audience, and also sharing it with my daughter, because I think what you just said, that teaching children how to talk about their feelings or what's going on inside their brain, is really important. And it's actually something that my daughter kind of struggles with. She has a very good grip on language, but it depends on if she wants to express herself. So when we ask her like how her day went and stuff, I can't remember. Oh, I don't know what happened. Those types of things. And so I think a book that encourages her to talk about her experiences and what's going on in her life or in her mind, I think would be very impactful for her.
Yeah, I'm doing the same with my daughter at the moment. She used to talk a lot, but obviously we're now at that really awkward hormonal preteen stage coming up secondary school, so she's doing that teen thing where she's just like bottling it all up, and I'm like, whoa, hang on, why have we stopped talking? And she's like, I don't know, I don't know what to say, I don't know how I feel. And you don't understand, mum. And it's like, oh, I really do. I may be 37 now, but I have been there. You know, I've gone through the girl thing that all girls go through. She's like, what? I'm like, I still go through it. She's like, but you don't try it. I'm like, because I've had 20 years practice, love. But we need to talk about it. We need to talk about your feelings. And she's like, I don't know how I feel. And I'm like, because you're a teenager now. You know, or you're coming up for a teenager and you go through that stage where you don't know how you feel, you don't know how to express yourself. We need to find a way.
Oh, absolutely. I think that's so important. So my last question for you, Amy, is what advice would you give to someone who is trying to find their path in life?
Just go for it. Find your dream. Dig deep to what you always wanted to do, even if you go back to when you were a child. If it makes your heart sing, then it's what you need to do with your life. Then, you know, we do this work and pay the bills. And so many people don't let their heart sing and do stuff that makes them happy. And we need to do more than that. If it makes your heart sing, follow that path. The minute your heart stops singing, find a different path. Paths change, lives change all the time. Keep doing what makes your heart sing. And if you're in a dark tunnel, if you keep going forward a little bit more, there's always an exit to a tunnel. There's always a light at the end of a tunnel. You know, so you just got to go into it a bit further, and it may hurt because you're going in darker, but at the end of it, there's always a little bit of light.
Oh, that's fabulous advice. It really is. And not just in life, in business as well. And how sometimes we have to endure a little bit more for our light at the end of the tunnel. And also, I love the mentality of do what makes your heart sing, because so many people, they do what makes them feel comfortable. They do what makes them feel safe and secure. And they don't really pay attention to, it's like, am I feeling really alive in this experience or in this business or during this path or on this walk? Am I doing what really makes me feel happy and makes my heart sing?
Yeah, and people realize they might do something, they're like, oh, I enjoyed that for a little bit. And yes, you enjoyed it, but did it make your heart sing? Because if your heart's singing, then your mental health will start coming up. Because you need to do these things that you enjoy for you, even if it's just 10 minutes a day. Even if it's watching rubbish on TV, if that's what makes you happy, do it. If it's reading the book in the quiet for 10 minutes, do it. Just do it.
Yes, take that step. Take that initiative and do it. Amy, thank you so much for being on Step Into Your Sunshine. It has been an absolute pleasure to have you.
Thank you for having me.
I loved every second of it. And for all of the listeners, we have new episodes on Mondays and Thursdays, 8 p.m. UTC time, 7 p.m. UK time, and 1 p.m. US Central Standard Time. And I can't wait to talk to all of you soon.